Okay, sound system is semi-functional at least. We might have to speak a little bit louder. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you to the Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania 2021 convention. We're going to kick things off today with a discussion between Scott Horton and Nicholas Sarwar talking about cooperation, talking about getting along. Now, Scott Horton, Scott is right here. Scott is an award-winning radio personality and host of the podcast, The Scott Horton Show. He is also the director of the Libertarian Institute and editorial director of the news portal antiwar.com. He has written hundreds, hundreds of articles, several books, including the critically acclaimed Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. Fellas, give it up for Scott Horton. Welcome him here, please. And opposite of Scott today, we have Nicholas Sarwar. Nick is a businessman and a criminal defense attorney from Manchester, New Hampshire. He's also a public defender and a former clerk for the Institute of Justice and has noted that his day job is keeping poor people out of prison.
Used to be. You got my old bio.
I have his old bio. He has served as the vice chair of the Libertarian Party of Colorado and the Libertarian Party of Maryland, but you may know him better as the former national chair of the Libertarian Party from 2014 through 2020, or as Elpedia notes, the lesser of the two Sarwars involved in the Liberty Movement. Everybody give a round of applause for Nicholas Sarwar. I am Sam Robb. I have the honor of moderating, or at least giving these guys a couple of questions to answer while you were eating breakfast. Before I do start, though, I want to note that I got a bunch of responses when we announced that we were going to have this conversation. They ranged from yes to I think Scott and Nick's event could be the highlight of the weekend. This is a great conversation to be had. I think there's a lot to be had from getting these guys together. I can't say how much I love this. You would not believe the various people that these comments came from. We are talking Mises Caucus, we are talking Radical Caucus, we are talking Pragmatic Caucus, we are talking people who just saw this happening and got excited that Nick and Scott were talking. So this is a fantastic event. I'm going to hand this microphone off to Scott after I ask my first question here. Scott, you have been involved and had a couple of guys on your show talking about the Defend the Guard movement. And I know you've testified on that, haven't you, in Texas?
Yeah.
This is a set of bills that would mandate that a state's National Guard troops not be deployed overseas without an official declaration of war from Congress. I sat in on a couple of Defend the Guard talks with the organizers, and I was amazed at who was there. Republicans, Democrats, Independents, Libertarians, Green Party, a bunch of people all coming together on one topic. Scott, could you tell us, what do you think makes that successful? Why was that level of cooperation there?
Thank you very much.
Thanks for starting with that. It's such an important thing.
Stay behind the speaker.
You're smart. That guy's smart.
Check. How's that? Is that better?
Okay.
That feedback. Thank you very much for having me here, and thank you for the great question. The Defend the Guard legislation is one of the most important things that's going on. The movement behind it is one of the most important things going on in the Liberty Movement in America today. And it started with a guy named Pat McGeehan, who's a state representative from West Virginia. And he introduced this legislation, and what it says is that the president cannot nationalize a state's guard unit unless they have an official declaration of war from the Congress, which is, of course, a poison pill because our Congress would never take responsibility and declare a war. They only authorize the presidents to start wars. The last time they declared war in Congress was in 1942 against Hungary. And so the movement was taken up by a group called BringOurTroopsHome.us,
which is led by a combat veteran from the Afghan War named Dan McKnight. He was a Marine, and then he was Army, and then he was Idaho National Guard, and was deployed to Afghanistan, and came home, read my book, decided he was going to do something about it, and created this group. And they're working with concerned veterans of America and Americans for Prosperity, and especially young Americans for Liberty. And they've gotten Ron Paul Republicans to introduce this legislation last year and this year. It looks like it's going to be 30 states will have this legislation introduced. And I don't think we've gotten it passed. There's some similar legislation that was passed in Montana, but it's just a victory at all to have this thing introduced and debated in all these houses, and it really, you know, sets the narrative that the anti-war movement of our current era is led by combat veterans of the 21st century wars. These are not old hippies from the Vietnam era. There's no tie-dye and Janis Joplin here. These are all guys who fought in Iraq War II, who fought in Afghanistan, and are trying to spare other young men the same grief for no reason that they went through. And they're working so hard on it. And I have been honored to be invited to testify with them in Texas and in Maine in favor of this legislation. And I think, as a lot of people know, wasn't this part of the story? When New Orleans drowned in Hurricane Katrina in 2005 and more than 1,000 people died, that the Louisiana National Guard was in Iraq. When the Oregon wildfires were out of control last year, the Oregon National Guard was in Afghanistan. And when young men join up the National Guard, forget the regular Army or the Marine Corps, they join up the National Guard, what they think they're joining up for is stacking sandbags in case of a flood, or helping firefighters in case of wildfires, or God forbid a riot gets completely out of control in a major city, then they would possibly be support for local civilian domestic law enforcement standing unarmed in the background at worst case scenario. But instead they're sent and do, you know, in many cases, the lion's share of the work fighting as the infantry on the ground in these wars. And that's why the men leading these groups are so sick and tired of it and are pushing so hard to have a real reversal there. And then, so here's what, part of what I told the group in Maine, had a lot of Democrats on the committee, and I was telling them, now listen, Democrats, if the Republicans are getting good on this now, you have a choice. You can switch and be the war party now, or you can congratulate them for finally seeing it your way and coming to the realization that this stuff has got to stop and that we need this grassroots type activism from the bottom up, from the state level up, to demand an end to this thing. And for that matter, a quarter of the things Joe Biden says about war lean toward hesitance, at least, right, if not actual restraint. There's a major piece by Michael Hirsch in foreignpolicy.com that said that Biden, Blinken, and Sullivan, his two most important guys, Secretary of State and National Security Advisor, that they want very badly to declare victory against Al-Qaeda and declare that ISIS is just a regional threat that could be managed by partners without us, and declare an end to the war on terrorism. And of course, the Pentagon and the Central Intelligence Agency and Central Command and all of the rest of the permanent national security state, of course, immediately pushed back hard against that and are still pushing back hard against that. So then what's the narrative in the country? The narrative needs to be that at the state level, the Republicans and the Democrats, and prodded along all the while by the libertarians, are prioritizing this anti-interventionist sentiment and are determined to let the national government know that they may not continue the policy of using state guard troops for foreign imperial adventures where we have no business. And so it is working, and there are Republicans and Democrats and libertarians all coming together to work very hard for this. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. I should have known better than to
hand me a mic. Yeah.
Hand you a mic and ask you about the anti-war efforts. So, Nick, I'm going to kind of turn the question, the same sort of question, inward for you. You have a history of activism within the party, and I'd like to ask you, Scott talked a little bit about how a common factor among modern military led to the formation of this coalition to try and end sending troops overseas, the National Guard overseas, without a declaration of war. Can you give us, talk a little bit about what you saw in your time as LNC chair about coalition building within the Libertarian Party? What do we need in order to bring people together and get them working on the same topics?
All right. What you need to come together and work together is something to work on. If you don't agree on what the goal is, then there's really no point in arguing about how we should accomplish the goal, because we're not trying to get to the same place. There's an analogy that a strong supporter of the Libertarian Party once gave me when I was talking to him about supporting the party more. You're on a lifeboat, right? Your ship is just going down, and there's 12, 13 of you on the lifeboat. Half of you think land is that way, and half of you think land is that way. What do? You got 7 to 6. You could all row in the direction you think is the right way, and then how fast do you move and in what direction? 6 people are going that way, 7 people are going that way. You move at the speed of one rower because the other people are pushing against you. So what you do instead, if you're in this situation and you don't want to die at sea, which most of us wouldn't, is you say, look, how far do you think land is that way? 3 hours. All right, here's the deal. We're all going to row that way for 4 hours. We're going to go past where you think land is together. And then you get 13 people that go that way, and if land's that way, we find it. And if after 4 hours we're not there, we all turn around and go the other way at the speed of all 13 of us rowing together. If you're not agreed upon where you're going, then this argument about how to get there is stupid. It's not worthwhile. And this is the issue that I see in building coalitions, is if you cannot agree on a common goal, then why would you work together? If you're not going to the same place, then you don't catch a ride with somebody. And if a lifeboat showed up and said, hey, our lifeboat's smaller, it hasn't gone anywhere, but we'd like to take over your lifeboat, and you should go where we tell you to go, that would probably not be well received, and hasn't been. And so the issue in working together with people is find something you want to work together on before you have this argument about who's the captain of the damn boat. And that isn't what's being done. And I will use Scott's Defend the Guard example. That's being pushed from the outside of legislators, the outside of legislatures, by people who are mad about how the thing works. And that's why it hasn't passed. Because you're not trying to work within that system, you're working against the system, and the people who are actually elected by your neighbors aren't interested in doing that. And you're not going to bully them into doing that because you haven't bullied them into doing that now. All the protests have not brought the troops home. We're still in Afghanistan. You can have a bunch of symbolic bills that say you're not supposed to send the guard without a declaration of war, and you're going to get the same answer that was given in Marbury versus Madison. You've got your bill that says I can't do this. Now enforce it. You have to achieve consensus within the community that you live in. That is the only way that you change the world. And I am not in this party, I am not in this movement to change minds. I am in this party to change the world. And that's out there, and that's not in here. And if you don't figure out how to work with the people out there and figure out how to find value in them and value in cooperation, if you fight them, you will get a fight. And if you cooperate with them and find something that is a shared goal that we want to achieve together, then it doesn't matter what they think about the other things that you like or don't like. Let me make this real simple. Real simple. This is Pittsburgh. A lot of people here like the Steelers. I married into a Redskins family. I'm not a big fan of the Steelers. That's how that works. Maybe I want to convince you we should legalize drugs because we should stop locking people in cages. I have two choices. I can convince you of one thing, that we should stop locking people in cages, or I can try and convince you of two things, that we should stop locking people in cages and also the black and yellow suck. How successful am I gonna be in trying to convince you of two things versus trying to convince you of one thing? How successful am I gonna be if I start with an argument and then say, hey, can't we work together on this cage thing? You know, once you take off that crappy jersey that you're wearing for the bad team, like then we can work together. You just have to change and then you can work with me. If you don't meet people where they are, they're going to reject you, and rightly so. And that's the problem I have with the fighting, and that's why I won't do it anymore.
Thank you, Nick. So now, actually, the two of you discussed talking so far. One of the things that that you mentioned, Nick, and that I think is a good thing to bring up, where are we headed? What is the ultimate goal? If we are not headed in the same direction, how can we work together? I think that was a great point. So I'm going to ask you, Scott, now, what do you see as the point of success for the Libertarian Party, and not only for the Libertarian Party, but for our country, you know, as the Libertarian Party gains influence and gains some measure of hopefully legislative control? Where is the end game and what are we driving for?
Okay, so that was what I was hoping you'd ask me first. All right, so yeah, for those of you who don't know me, by the way, I'm the guy from antiwar.com. And I meant to say thank you also. I owe all of you guys an extra thank you for having me out in 2018. I gave a speech about my Afghanistan book and they put it on C-SPAN, the book TV, my big break. So that was really cool. So I'm really grateful to you guys for that. And listen, I've been working for antiwar.com really for, you know, almost this whole century long now. I have not been very involved in Libertarian Party politics. I'm from Texas. I've not really been on the ground, you know, petition signature getter and this kind of thing. I've focused on other work. But I was the foreign policy advisor to Michael Badnar in 2004, the presidential candidate. And I was also an unofficial advisor to Gary Johnson, to Jacob Hornberger, and to Joe Jorgensen last year. So I am very interested in the party, and I am a big supporter of the party, and I always have been. And really, it's the Libertarian Party is the reason that I'm here. It was right when I was getting out of high school was when Harry Brown was running for president in 1996. And I just absolutely loved what Harry Brown had to say. And then right after that was when, that same year, was when Ron Paul got reelected to go back to Congress. And so I started watching Ron Paul on C-SPAN. And those two gentlemen are the reason that I'm part of this movement more than any other thing. And honestly, it's that high from the Harry Brown campaign of the year 1996 and the year 2000 that I've been chasing ever since then. And wanted to see recreated with a Libertarian presidential campaign. And it's important that we have another Ron Paul Revolution-sized public relations effort on behalf of libertarianism in this country right now. because America is a falling empire. And we have so many problems. And it's the left and the right and the establishment centrists. You know, the conservative Democrats and the liberal Republicans, they have dug this country into this grave. And libertarian solutions are the only real solutions for the problems that we have, and including in solving all of the division politically that we have in this country. We have to stop doing all the worst things first. And of course, that means all the lockdowns, all of the wars, all of the militarization and the war on drugs and the federalization of police and crony capitalism and corruption and inflationary money and central banking and all the things that are the most wrong with the United States. We have to put those first. I'm going to go over on this one.
Why?
Well, I got a
bunch. Be shorter. Be succinct.
I can't be succinct. I'm Scott Horton, if you guys have never met me. That's the one thing I cannot do. But I promise to be quiet and let you go on as long as you want. I'm not trying to take up your time, buddy, at all. I promise that. But listen, I think that there's a few false dichotomies in the libertarian movement and in the libertarian party, such as, are we trying to win or are we trying to educate people? Right? Are we trying to be radical or are we trying to get more votes? Are we trying to be radical or are we trying to be pragmatic? And it's something that I know Nick and I agree on in broad principle anyway, that good, smart radicalism is pragmatic. And in fact, I would submit to you that moderation is not. And there's no evidence that being slightly warmed over, nicer Republicans is good for the Libertarian Party or good for recruiting people in the general public. But hang on, I promise I'll let you go. But listen, I want to concede to the pragmatists who do conflate pragmatism with moderation, I want to concede a great part of their argument, okay? Because it's only fair. Sometimes radicalism is really stupid, okay? Sometimes radicalism is a big fat guy doing a striptease on C-SPAN in the middle of a political convention. Or, say, running a campaign claiming that Medicare is the very single worst tyranny in America that must be halted first. Or something insane and stupid like that. And that's and when the pragmatist moderates see that kind of stupidity, then of course, it reinforces the idea that, no, we have to be more buttoned up. We have to be more acceptable to the general population in our neighborhoods and meet them more where they are. But I think that that's a false conclusion. I think you got to go back to Harry Brown and go back to Ron Paul. And these are men who are absolutely radical, but they bring with them the character and the charisma of good leaders. They don't say stupid things. They put opposition to the worst things first. And they changed the hearts and minds of the American people by the millions. And I meet people to this day constantly who are part of this movement because of Harry Brown. And of course, as we all know, it goes without saying what the Ron Paul Revolution did to the liberty movement in America in 2008 and 2012. And so, one more thing here and I'll shut up. Right now, there's a big split in the Republican Party where the centrist, sort of compassionate conservative Bush 43 types are even threatening to split away from the party, which has been taken over by the populist right pro-Trump forces. Now, I know it can be tempting, and there was talk of this even in 2016, of let's try to recruit Jeb Bush. And let's try to get these centrist rhinos who are being kicked out of the party and get them to join us. And because, hey, there could be some real donors there and real opportunity to be on TV and this kind of thing. But I would just warn you that that's actually the exact opposite of what we want. That it would come with more attention, but ultimately would be the kiss of death. These are the people who have ruined everything. These people are the reason that people even turn to the likes of Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders in the first place. And our job
is to do what, frankly, Rand Paul was supposed to have done this whole time, and that is lead the liberty movement for America, to show the people that as the centrist, compassionate, conservative, sort of right-wing liberal, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, John McCain type consensus dies, that we don't need to move further to the right to populist nationalism, and we don't need to move further to the left towards Bernie Sanders socialism. We need liberty. And if we end the wars and end the crony capitalism and end the police state, then we can heal this country. Now I'll be quiet.
Sorry, Please, wait. I have a request. Don't stop. Answer the question of what success looks like.
Okay.
The one that you were asked. Can we get to that?
I'm sorry, Nick. I should have made sure to...
Sam asked you a question about what is success. What is it that we're trying to do? And you didn't answer that question. So if you can answer that question, then we can have a dialogue.
Please. All right. Well, so my answer to the question is, I want a libertarian party that represents the American libertarian movement. I want a libertarian party that has the energy behind it to recreate the Ron Paul revolution of 2008 and 2012 for our presidential candidate in the year 2024, which is coming up sooner than we expect. And now listen, when it comes to state politics and local politics, Libertarian Party activity means hard work on the ground, shaking hands, going to meetings, talking to people, collecting signatures, lobbying your local city council, your local county board, and all retail level politics is all very important. And Libertarian Party members in all 50 states have so much to be proud of when it comes to that. But when it comes to our presidential runs, we have to admit, most Americans don't even pay attention to politics at all, except during a presidential election. And that's where we have to make a real impression. And not to knock any of the great candidates that I've been an advisor for over this time, but what I want to see is the recreation of the Harry Brown campaign of year 2000, the Ron Paul Revolution, and that level of a massive speaking tour, as Ron Paul did, on behalf of peace and liberty, to show the American people that this is really the way forward here. And then that is what is good for the libertarian movement, and that is what's good for the Libertarian Party, and that will be what's good for the United States of America, because we will be the ones setting the agenda for the campaign of 2024. Kamala Harris and Ted Cruz or whoever want to talk about X and Y issue, we're not going to let them. We're going to force the issues to be. Well, hopefully there won't be any COVID restrictions left by then. But still, there will be wars, and there will be crony capitalism, and there will be militarized police state, and plenty for the Libertarian Party to oppose and to rally the American people for liberty and against those policies. And that, to me, is what is victory, and that, to me, is what is pragmatic.
How will you measure if you are successful? And I'm gonna take some time.
Oh, okay. Well, you asked me a question.
I'm gonna make it a little more rhetorical this time.
Okay.
So Scott has clearly distilled one of the reasons why people are libertarians, right? One of the reasons people are libertarians is they loved the high that they got from the Harry Brown campaigns, both of them, or the Ron Paul campaigns, three of them, two of them in a shitty party. They want to go back to the feeling of camaraderie, of being together and fighting against something. But fighting against something doesn't build anything. Fighting doesn't build anything. Antiwar.com has done great work for a very long time bringing attention to the issues of war. And that attention has led to no accomplishment. It is not enough
to wake people up. I have an alarm that wakes us up every morning so I can drive my kids to the bus. If I don't get them dressed and out of the house and into the car and onto the bus, waking them up didn't do a lot of good. You don't just wake people up. You have to give people something to do. They have to have something to do. And you can either give them something to do, which is go stand outside someone's house, stand outside a building, stand outside something, and yell really loud to get attention. You can do that. And then everybody goes home. And when the protests are over, nothing has changed. And every time we had a criminal justice tragedy in this country, every time we had an officer-involved shooting, every time there were loud protests that were ignored, and then the cops walked. Because when all the people went home and back to sleep, then business continued as usual. And it is only after this last year and the George Floyd protests and the Black Lives Matter movement really getting to the point of, you have to change this law. You have to get rid of this politician. This DA is no longer allowed to let cops skate if they kill somebody. This city council is no longer going to be allowed to fund police brutality with our money. And we're going to go change the regulations. We're going to change the politicians. We're going to change the world, because it is not enough to be angry. You have to be effective. And if there is one thing that I was disappointed with, and I will tell you, I will compare resumes with anybody in this room. I came in, Harry Brown was my first convention. I've only registered Republican in my life one time in 2008 to vote for Ron Paul in the Republican primary. Clap louder, Ron Paul fans. Here's the thing. That was great for waking people up, but it woke them up to do nothing. It woke them up to have slogans and bumper stickers and rallies and yell and
join the
angry.
LP.
Yeah, why we're here.
I didn't interrupt you.
Yeah, you did.
I asked you a question after you were done. So
that's not the way I remember it, but all right.
Memories fade. So what we have to do is go out and get votes. What we have to do is go out and change laws. What we have to do is not say, you guys are all doing it wrong, not go and insult our neighbors who voted for those people and say, you're bad people for voting for those people. These people are bad people for the past sins that they've done, because you'll never get them to do anything for you if you start with an attack. People in this room have had that experience. They have come into organizations and started with fighting, and they've received a reception that's less than cordial. Because you start with a fight, you get a fight. If you see cops show up to a protest and they're all wearing hard gear and they've got their helmets on and they've got their batons in their hand, then there's gonna be a fight because they came ready for one, and that starts it. If you see cops working a protest and they're all in soft gear and they're not hands on their firearms and they're not trying to bottle people up, protests go real peaceful. Because they didn't come for a fight, and neither did the protesters. You get out of things what you bring to them. And if you bring conflict energy, if you bring fighting, you're going to get fights. And if you bring cooperative energy, if you say, what is it that you want to accomplish, and how can I help you do the things you want to do, then you don't get fights. You don't get conflict, you get cooperation and you get progress. And so what we need to do is stop telling people glib platitudes and say libertarians have solutions for stuff, you guys suck. And we need to actually show our neighbors, here is the problem that you experience, here is what the politicians that currently exist have not fixed your problem because you're still experiencing it. I have a solution. Would you like to work together so we can get it done? And working together to get things done is all that I am willing to do anymore. I have served this party for many, many years. I've been in this party for over 2 decades. I've never been anything other than a libertarian. And for those of you who keep asking so nicely on Twitter, I'm never leaving. I'm never going away. Ever. Ever, 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 ever. You see a lot of people come and go if you've been around for a while. And you know who does the work, and you know who comes in and says they can do the work. And it's different people. So I am willing and eager to work with anyone to do good, and with no one to do wrong. That is what I'm willing to do. And that means Republicans, it means Democrats, it means libertarians, it means unaffiliated people, it means anybody to do good work. But the other thing that's really key here is I am not willing to work with anyone to go backwards. There are a lot of good memories I have about the Ron Paul Revolution and the Harry Brown campaigns. But somebody told me once something that's really stuck with me, and maybe it will stick with you and maybe it will help you in your life. When you go camping and you sit around a campfire with all your friends and you have some beers and you have stories and you have a great time, that feeling is powerful. That emotion resonates. That brings you closer together. But the next day, you can't go back and make that campfire again. All that's there is ashes and memories. You have to keep hiking. You have to go to the next campsite. You have to find the next thing, and you have to kindle new fires all the time. Every day of your life, you need to be looking for, what am I doing next? Where am I going? Because achievements are not worthwhile in themselves. Only the process of growth in achieving is worthwhile. So take the energy, take the memories you have of those good times and use them to sustain yourself, but go into places and do things that are new and different and uncomfortable, or you're not growing.
We did get a little bit of a late start, so we're going to wrap up here right now, but I do want to point out something that I saw as common between both Nick and Scott. Scott talked about people getting out and running in local elections and helping local office. Nick, are you laughing?
No, I made a joke, I'm gonna share with the class. I said to Scott, it's because we both wear ties. We have something in common.
I think it's a lot more than that.
And I think it's important to recognize that even though both Nick and Scott come from different angles at Liberty, that is something that they are both passionate about. And I think one of the things that we come out of this understanding is that if you are passionate about something, it's going to change you. It's going to move you to action. It doesn't matter whether you're talking about getting involved in a presidential campaign, getting involved in a local campaign, showing up at your convention and voting, showing up at your local meetings and getting involved in your community. We truly only act on beliefs that make a difference in our lives. And I'm going to ask you guys, how many of you believe in liberty? Okay, that sucks. Okay. When I ask you how many of you believe in liberty, I expect this tent to shake. How many of you believe in liberty?
Yeah. Come on, you say it like that.
Much better. Okay. Where are my radicals out here? I know we've got some radicals. Go ahead. Give it up. Come on. That's not very radical.
Where are my Joe Jorgensen's campaign supporters? Where are the sponsors of the Fantastic. I know we've got a few Mises people out there. Where are you? Awesome. I'm going to ask you one of my favorite questions from Harry Chapin, talking about Thanksgiving food drives. He had a comment. He was talking about some kids doing Thanksgiving food drive, and he said, hey, guys, let's talk about what's going to happen to these people that we gave food to next week. What's going to happen after this good feeling phase? What are we going to do next week? What are we going to do next month? What are we going to do next year? And here's what I want to challenge you guys to do. Get out there and make a difference. Coming to this convention, voting for whoever you like is one thing. That is the first step. That is a start to changing your lives and changing your communities. We need you to get out there and to sell your neighbors, to sell your community on libertarian ideas, libertarian solutions, and put things in action. Ladies and gentlemen, let's give a round of applause for Scott Horton and Nick Taylor. Thank you for your time.